Today is Tuesday, August 10, 2021. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dr. Stanley Buse, last name spelled B-E-U-S. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Stanley. How are you today?
Good, fine. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for letting us do this oral history. I wanted to start with the year you were born. What year were you born?
1930.
Do you remember family stories about how your mom met your dad?
Yes. My parents were both from northern Utah. My father grew up in Hooper, Utah, which is out near the edge of Great Salt Lake, just west of Ogden. And my mother grew up in Salt Lake City. In fact, her father was a bank president there. He was pretty well off when he got through.
Okay.
They were both teachers at first. They came up into Idaho to teach school. Ended up teaching at a place called Ammon, Idaho, near Idaho Falls. And met and got acquainted and courted and decided to get married.
Do you remember what year that was that they got married?
1929. Not a very auspicious time to start a family, 1929, but that's when they started.
Good for them. And where did you grow up then?
I grew up mainly on a dairy farm in Idaho.
Okay. In Ammon there?
No, it was a little village called Manan, a farming village north of Idaho Falls.
Okay.
I don't know what it was. It was just a farming community, but it was on right on the edge of the Snake River, with a good irrigation system. In fact, they had the oldest water right on the Snake River.
Wow.
So it was established in the 18, I'm sure in the 1880s, somewhere in there. Something like that, but they had good irrigation water supply.
Did your father then quit teaching?
He ended up as a school principal.
Okay.
For a few years, and by the time I was born, while he was teaching, and my mother stayed home started having children then, and I mm-hmm. actually had a daughter soon after I was born, and that daughter didn't live very long. She died of some childhood disease.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But then she had six more sons and one daughter.
Okay.
She had eight children that lived. And so she spent her early days, once we got started, taking care of the kids. And at the very near the end of her life, she went back to teaching again when we were all raised and grown up.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But
So on the dairy farm, that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. My father was fortunate that he had as many sons, because the dairy farm, you have to be there every day.
Every
day,
that's right.
Cows don't wait. They have to be milked twice a day sometimes. Well, they have to milk twice a day sometimes, at least once a day. And so, but after each one of us got to be make 14 years old, we could handle the milking. Even it was a milking operation with milking machines, and they worked very well. We ended up with 50 cows.
Wow.
Which for a small farmer, it was quite a bit.
That's a lot.
But anyway, he was fortunate that he had all the sons coming along, so when we got old enough, each one of us at the age of 14 or there could begin to take over the milking. We couldn't do everything, we could take over the milking every day, He and his mother could go, my mother could go somewhere. So that was...
Can you tell me what that entailed? What did you do? How did that work?
Well, we all had a turn at doing various things. We helped feed the young calves, that were born and then raised, and if they were good milking cows, we'd keep them, raise them, and use them as cows. And we took turns tending the calves and so on. We also took turns on the tractor, plowing and sowing, and we had, it was only a small farm, only 80 acres, but it was pretty rich for soil, and we would put most of it into hay.
Okay.
And some grain, and even tried potatoes for a little while, but the soil was a bit clobby for potatoes, so we didn't do that very long, but continued to, the farm mainly was contributing hay and pasture for the cows. Pasture in the summer and then hay in the winter.
And
we helped with all that parts of the farm. We all did part of the farm work and livestock managing and everything. It was a good experience. It kept us pretty busy.
Did you have chickens?
Yeah, we had chickens.
And
we had two big laying coops.
Uh-huh.
With chickens producing eggs.
Okay.
Commercially.
And how many gallons of milk a day would you make?
Oh, gosh. I can't remember, but it was a lot. We had a storage tank. Eventually, we had a storage tank so that it would fill up and the milkman would come by and just drain the tank into his tank. And
okay. He had a big truck.
Yeah, something like that.
Huh? Uh-huh.
We started out, you know, with regular milk cans.
Yep.
10-gallon milk cans, and we did that for several years, but finally... we made a very elaborate milking parlor, essentially, in which the cows would just come in. When they knew it was time to milk, they'd line up and come in. And they'd stand in a staunch in there and put on a milking machine, have two going at the same time, you know, and could change them. And it was fairly efficient. We'd have the radio going, we'd have music playing while we're milking the cows.
Okay. Okay.
We figured the cows probably got used to enjoying the music.
Yeah, sure. Did you learn to swim then in the Snake River? Or?
Yes, and we swam in the irrigation ditches too.
I did
swim a little bit. What I did on the Snake River was go canoeing. Well, canoeing on the Snake River. The Snake River was not as... rough as you remember the Colorado River is, and it doesn't have that steep a fall. It's a fairly quiet flowing river most of the time. It would go in high flood stage periodically and really be going. And one of those times I remember we went down to one of my friend's farms, which was right by the river, and the river had backed up even into their back part of their farmyard. And we put in with a canoe. Once we got out on the river, my goodness, the river had been in flood stage upstream, so we had trees coming down the river, and everything. It just took us away. We went for miles.
Yeah. How would you get back home?
Well, our fathers wouldn't know, find where we're gonna come in. We'd tell them where we had planned to pull in, somewhere downstream. There were several places where you could access the river. In fact, the community was right bordered by the river. The little farming community was bordered by the river for several miles. And so we would just tell them where we planned to get out and try to get back to shore there.
Did you wear life jackets, or were you just on your own in the canoe?
I think we wore life jackets once we got in, because the river was, it was a little bit scary. In fact, my father, I think, was really reluctant to see us go on the canoe, but we wanted to do it. And
how old were you?
Probably a young teenager.
Okay.
And we did that.
And did you all do any camping? I mean, the thing about a dairy business is it never stops.
That's true.
So how do you get any time to do anything as a family?
Well, we did, we'd sometimes go and leave one of the boys home to milk for a day or two.
Okay.
That was one way to get around it. But we did go relatively near to Yellowstone Park and Grand Teton National Park. And up on the Montana-Idaho border was a place called, now I've got to think of the name of it. I'll think of it in a moment. I can't remember it right now.
No worries.
Anyway, it was a beautiful place with a river, a small river going through it. We could go canoeing up there. We could go up there and just have a picnic during the day and come back the same day. We were that close to that area.
Okay.
But we sometimes go over and stay overnight. And I got involved in Boy Scouts once I turned 12 and went on a number of scouting events where we did camp out for maybe a week at a time.
Okay. Where did you go? What did you do?
Well, the most memorable experience I can remember is walking about a hundred mile hike through parts of Yellowstone Park.
Wow.
Backpacking. And we were away from the highway most of the time. We did hit the highway for 10 miles, and we hitchhiked along the highway for 10 miles. Otherwise, we walked most of that 100-mile loop in a week's time.
Wow.
Camping out every night. We went to the one of the geyser hot spring areas off the highway a ways and camped there. And it was, I remember how delightful it was to have all that kind of hot and cold running water, you know. We could have, there was a cool stream we could swim in. There was a warm spring there that we could bathe in. Then there was a hot spring where we could get hot water to help heat our frick. It was a delightful place.
Nice. And this would have been just at the end of the Second World War. 16 or so, how old were you at that time?
Yeah, I was between 13 and about 16 or 17, yes.
Okay.
So I was...
Do you remember the restrictions on tires and gasoline and things during the war? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we did have permission to have more gasoline because we used it on the tractors. So we had our own gas pump and gas tank underneath, and we were entitled to a certain amount of additional gasoline for use farming. I don't know what how the limitation, I don't know how they worked that out, but I know my father had it so that we could have gas delivered to our tank, and then when we needed gas, we'd just pump it and put it in the tractor.
Great.
And we did it in the sun. We didn't do much traveling during those war years. I can remember near the end of the war, when we had a chance to travel, we took off one time and went way over into central Idaho on a fishing trip. I went with my father, and there were some of the boys went and some of the boys stayed to help with the milking. But I can remember a number of events like that where we took some time off to go after, especially right after the war was over. We could travel beautiful places in central Idaho. I remember going to Alturas Lake, for example, and a number of other beautiful lakes, fishing in central Idaho.
Did you get your Eagle Scout? Mm-hmm. What did you do your project in?
I did several projects on the farm in terms of improvements. I put in some stairways and railings on the stairway down, and we had a cellar, a basement sort of a cellar thing, and then I had a stairway down there, and I put railings on the side of it, and did a number of improvements in the farm area. That's, I can't remember specific how many of them, but mm-hmm. Several projects that was my Eagle Scout project.
Nice. Was schooling something that was, I mean, this is almost a stupid question, knowing that your mom and dad were teachers.
Yeah.
Did they really instill in you education?
Yes, they did. Yes, they were both very much, they just encouraged us to, when we went to school, to do well and try to do well. And we did pretty well most of the time. A couple of my brothers, Noah, ended up, I remember being, you know, the top of their class in high school and being active in student activities and so on during that time. And it was a small high school, a small rural high school. There were only like 200 students in the whole high school.
Okay.
When I went. So by the time my younger brothers came along, they incorporated into a larger neighboring high school called Rigby High School, which is about 8 miles away. And they had a bigger high school, a little bit more well-developed activities. Our high school was in a fairly rural area, and I remember when we had a football game, we didn't have 100 yards uninterrupted any of the football field we had was only about 80 yards long.
Okay.
So how do you play a football game then? Well, as soon as we started moving down the field, then they set us back 20 yards. So to get the other end, we had to do 100 yards.
Yeah.
You know, even if we had to do.
But if the other team intercepted your pass, they didn't have far to go.
That's true.
I have to think about this. Did you like sports? Did you play sports?
Yes, I did. I played. I enjoyed football. I enjoyed basketball more because we were, of course, inside and we didn't have any limitations there. We had a good basketball court and some good coaches and did pretty well, I remember, in high school.
What was your favorite topic in school?
In high school, it was actually what we called seminary, which was a religious class that we had every day. It was done by the church, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We were all active members of that, and in fact, my father ended up being a bishop there for some time.
Okay.
We would have the seminary, I believe, was right across the street from the high school. And we'd have at least one hour a day. Most of us at different times of the day would have an hour seminary class.
Okay.
We'd have a seminary instructor. He was, I still remember, one of my favorite teachers. He ended up teaching in Nevada. He went up, he taught in college, taught the religious classes in college and so on. And
what was his name? Do you remember?
But he'd been in the military, he'd been in the army, he'd been in the Marine Corps, and had come back from the war, and we had been kind of a rowdy class because during the World War II, most of the young men who were teachers were in the army or Navy or somewhere. He was in the Marines. We got kind of rowdy. We had a parent substitute, you know, teaching our seminary class, and we were sometimes kind of rowdy about it, I'm afraid. And as I think back now, we weren't always very well behaved. But when this seminary teacher came, he just came straight out of the Marine Corps, and he'd heard all about us. And so the first few weeks that he came there, he wore his full Marine officer uniform.
Wow.
We were impressed, and he really shaped us up.
Wow. Do you remember his name?
Yes. A. Theodore Tuttle.
What else can you tell me about him?
Well, he lived in the same little town that I did. Our high school covered several communities.
Okay.
Ours wasn't enough. But he lived in our town, and so we went to church with him
and
his family. And they were wonderful people. We got acquainted with his wife and some of his family. And he was only there for a few years, and then he was gone to college level teaching and so on.
But okay.
He was a wonderful teacher, especially that first day in seminary when we walk into the class and here's the teacher in a full Marine officer dress uniform.
Nice, nice.
We were impressed.
Yeah, well, he knew how to command respect.
Yep, and it worked.
Nice.
Yep, he was very good.
Are there any other teachers that you remember that inspired you?
Yes, the one that some of taught us, I remember teaching general science.
Okay.
That we had. I can't remember his name right now. I may have to think of it later, but he covered quite a bit, you know, between physics, chemistry, and geology. He really covered those subjects, which was a lot to cover
okay.
in a high school class, but he did that. And that's what got me somewhat interested in, eventually, in geology.
Did he take you all on field trips at all, geology field trips?
Not very much, because okay. that was during World War II, and there wasn't much provision for field. He didn't have any field trips. And I remember later on, when the war was over, and then my last year or two was after the war was over, I was still in high school, and then they developed it more that last year or two with field trips. But
I would think
it very many, but I had learned between exercising on the farm and going out into the wilderness, canoeing on this river and so on, hiking in Yellowstone and Grand Teton Park. These were spectacular places, and I really liked being there. And so when I started college, again, this was during World War II, when, or soon after, right, soon after World War II, and then along came the Korean War, pretty soon after that. And so I was in college for the beginning part of the Korean War.
So let's back up for a minute here. Now, you would have been really helpful on the farm.
Yeah.
As an 18-year-old,
yeah.
Now you would have had two or three younger brothers
yes.
who were helping as well.
Yes, they were.
Did your parents expect you to go to college, or is that something you wanted to do?
Well, by the time I got to be a senior, my parents had encouraged me to want to go to college, and so I did.
Okay.
I went for 2 years. College at it was a community college in Rexburg, Idaho, called Ricks College. It's now called BYU, Idaho, Brigham Young University, Idaho. But then it was a smaller college, but there were some good teachers there, and that's where I really got to at least expose the geology a little bit. I didn't get very far in it there, really, but I got exposed a little bit in kind of a general science course there. But after 2 years, then I did what most of our family of young men would try to do as they got to be that age. I was ready to go serve as a missionary for 2 years, and that was a common practice. And the draft board, I was subject to draft. See, I'd been in college for 2 years. I was 20 years old now.
Okay.
The Korean War was on. I'm subject to the draft.
Okay.
They said, I went to the draft board. They were familiar with their situation. And so they said, you can go on your mission for 2 years, but as soon as you're back, you're subject to the draft.
Okay.
Okay. I said, all right, that's fine. So I did go and spent the time in California and Oregon. It's a wonderful experience there, teaching and preaching and so on.
Who was your elder assigned with you? Who else did you go with?
Well, I just went by myself, but we always had companions. And when we got in the mission field, they could find it. I had a companion every time, different ones over time. Always two of us going together.
Did you meet anyone there that you became friends with for life in that?
Yes. My companion for the most time was Elder Gordon Snow from Raymond, Alberta, Canada.
Okay.
And we kept in touch for years afterwards. I'm not even sure now if he's still alive. I have lost track in the last while, but he was one that I knew the best and probably felt the more comfortable with. But I had good companions. They were all there trying to do the same thing, to share the gospel with other people. And occasionally we would cause a ruckus somewhere, and somebody would call the police, and then the police would bring us in to see what we were doing. And when they found out we were just proselyting, it was okay, you know. But some people thought we might be suspicious of these young men out there
in suits and ties.
Yeah, suits and ties. So we had some interesting experience with that, but it was a good experience.
Okay.
So when I came back from the mission, when I went to the draft board and see, and they said, well, remember, you're subject to the draft now. The Korean War was on. And they said, if you want to get right back into college, you can do that for a time. But I thought, no, that's not fair. I said, I really said this to him. I said, when I left and you promised that I could go if I'd be subject to the draft, so now I'm back, now draft me. So they did. And okay. I ended up in the Army during the Korean War.
Okay.
I didn't get to Korea ever. I was spent the time in what we later called the Battle of Fort Ord, California.
So back up for a second. You knew A. Theodore Tuttle as
yes.
a Marine.
Right.
Did joining the Marines attract you, or was there any other branch of service that you were attracted to?
No, I just said, draft me. Go ahead and draft me. I'll go in the Army.
You wanted to serve.
I told them. They said that's what I was subject to as soon as I got home from the mission. And so
okay.
I said, even though they'd said, if you want to go to college, you kind of know, I said I would go, so draft me. So they
okay.
did.
Where did you do your basic training?
In Camp Roberts, California.
What do you remember about that?
Some interesting experiences, meeting with a lot of people from all over the country. A lot of people from the western states were there. In fact, there were quite a few returned missionaries, as you can imagine, coming from Utah and Idaho and the places where there were a lot of members of the church there. And in fact, at one time, after I'd been there about a year, there were enough Church of Jesus Christ members in the Army in Fort Ord, they organized a branch of the church called a branch of the Church of Jesus Christ for servicemen at Fort Ord.
Okay.
Because there were hundreds. There were several hundred there.
Okay.
And we had involved, most of us had some activities there, you know, some good experiences there with them. I ended up being the branch president for a while.
So let's go back to your basic training.
Okay.
What do you remember about that?
I remember especially the bivouac that we had to go on. Everybody had to go through a bivouac experience. I mean, out camping out, sort of, in the wilderness with tents. Sometimes we had tents, sometimes we just slept out. And it wasn't too bad because I'd done that before. It wasn't all new to me.
Exactly.
It was interesting. We had to have some military activities, of course, while we were there, and we did that. And I just remember them. It was hot in Camp Roberts in the summertime, and I was there in the summer. It's just far enough inland that there was no sea breeze there. Mm-hmm. It's a nice place, but it was very hot. And every time we got a break, we'd all sit down in the shade. And we just hear him call us up in about 30 minutes. We got back out. Say, off your behind and on your feet, out of the sun and into the heat.
And in the heat.
Out of the sun and into the heat.
That's
what
uh-huh.
I thought.
Uh-huh.
So, but it was a good experience. And we got well acquainted with each other as we were camping out there together. And I enjoyed that part of it. And I ended up, because I started at Camp Roberts, but after I got through basic training, they shifted us to Fort Ord. And that's where there was the biggest group that I mentioned, where there was a serviceman's branch and so on. And they were sending a lot of people over to Korea, but there were a group of us that were helping that they got us together to help train supply sergeants. it turned out that about four out of the six of us in there were returned missionaries. We'd had experience teaching, and that helped. And so they tied us up for the whole rest of the service, the rest of that 2 years, teaching, training, supply sergeants. We got to, we had specialized in different parts of it, but the most enjoyable for most of us was we got to fire all the weapons that the military, that the infantry used there, you know. We got to fire the recoil rifle and all kinds of things, and just to test them, you know. And we'd have these students who were learning to be spy sergeants, because they had to know pretty well a lot about all the weapons.
Okay.
You know, the practice of disassembling and assembling the M1 rifle blindfolded, see how fast they could do it, you know.
Okay.
That sort of thing. It was an interesting experience. It was pleasant in a way, because by this time I was married, and
okay.
My wife had been a school teacher.
Wait a minute.
I married the woman you met here is my second wife.
Mm-hmm.
The first wife passed away after we've been married 50 years. That's another story.
Let's go back and introduce me to this woman you were married to for 50 years.
Okay.
How did you meet her? When did you meet her?
I met her at Rick's College.
Okay.
As a freshman.
Okay.
She had come up from Salt Lake City, because he had a grandmother living right across the street from the college.
Oh, that's handy.
And she was going to go to the University of Utah, but the grandmother told her, she said, "You promised me that you'd come up and stay with me for a while." And so she came up to Rick's College, and that's how come I met her. I would never met her otherwise, but there she was. And
what was her name?
Karma Albrechtson. It's an old Danish family.
Albrechtson.
Albrechtson, it's like, almost like a German spelling.
Thank you.
Her grandparents were Danish. They had come from Denmark.
Okay.
And so later on, well into our marriage time, we took a trip to Denmark.
Wow.
Went to visit the house, not the house, but the community where her parents, her grandparents had lived.
Nice.
Had a nice, wonderful experience. I was married, and I was married after 2.5 years at Rick's College, because that's where we met and courted each other, and then I got married just before I was drafted.
So what attracted you to her?
Well, I just remember seeing her in the freshman English class. Here was a girl from Salt Lake City. I was impressed that she'd come from Salt Lake City. I had been born there, but I didn't live there, but I had lots of relatives there. And she just seemed like really a neat gal, and we got well acquainted, and we got well enough acquainted that we really liked each other. And so the second year we were there, instead of going home to Salt Lake in the summer, she stayed and worked in Rexburg, Idaho as a waitress, so we could still have the summer together.
Nice.
We were still just courting, but...
So tell me, what was courting like? This was in 1949, 48?
1950. Uh-huh.
1950?
Yeah.
What, did you go to dances? What did you do?
Oh, yeah. We went to dances.
What kind of dancing did you do?
Oh, I can't remember exactly what we did. We did square dances. We did dancing two together, and
okay,
as well as in groups. And there was a lot of the main dances we went to were in the college environment, and most of the students there were from the church. You know, it was
mm-hmm.
a church college. There were some others that weren't members, but we had a good time with them as well. I had some roommates who were not members, but we still did much of the same thing and participated
mm-hmm.
in the dances. I can't think of where it all. I even took a dancing class at Rick's College.
Wow. Okay. So I'm thinking ballroom dancing.
Yeah,
and
it was ballroom dancing.
Foxtrot and
yep.
Some of those dances like
yep.
that. Okay.
And we loved that. That was a good experience.
Nice. And then the movies. Did you go to movies together?
Yes, occasionally.
Okay.
We didn't go to very many movies then because we were so busy with schoolwork, but we did go to some.
And then in the summers, would you go back to help your dad at the farm?
Yes,
okay.
I did.
But that must have been tough because you couldn't get a job to get some money. I mean, you're working for your family. You don't get paid for that. So,
yeah. But the last year, let's see, when I got near the land, my last year of college there at Rick's, I did get a job, part-time job driving a truck.
Okay.
One of our neighbors, good neighbors, had a big tray truck, and he would haul a hay truck from, he would haul good alfalfa hay, which is pretty rich hay, up into Montana to some of the ranches up there where they had grass hay. And then he would bring a load of hay back to Idaho Falls to the stockyard where they were oxing off cattle.
Okay.
Which was cheaper, you know, the hay was cheaper than the alfalfa hay.
So they wanted
the good hay up there.
They wanted the Montana hay.
Yeah.
And Montana wanted the Idaho hay.
Yeah, they wanted the good rich hay for their cattle when they could feed them. And the stockyards, they wanted this cheaper hay just to feed the cattle for a few days before they shipped them out after they were sold.
Right.
So we made a number of trips like that. And I learned how to drive a truck, even though it was an old International.
So this would have been a six-wheel tractor pulling a...
No, it was. Well, yeah, it was. It was a tractor with a big, long 30-foot semi on the back of it.
Yeah.
That's where we put the hay.
And it would be full of hay, so that gets to be pretty heavy.
Yeah, it was baled hay. So we stacked the bales up there. And
tie them down?
Yep. I remember... One of the trips we just got back down off the pass from Montana into Idaho, into the first little town coming down in Idaho, coming back towards Idaho Falls. It was about, must have been at least 100 and something miles up into where we're going in Montana. And I looked back because there was another driver behind me with another train. I looked back and his stack of bales apparently it had gotten to one side and then it just... I was back and it just dumped over on the side of the highway. This whole thing went off. So we had to go back, and the owner came up and helped us. You know, we had to restack the spales. It was tedious, but it was a good experience for me to learn to drive a truck and be able to do something, earn some money at the time.
Right. When did you and Karma get married?
We got married in 1953. Right after, let's see, after, no, we got married in 52, just near the end of 52, that was it. But she had already graduated and was teaching in St. Anthony, north of Rexburg away. She was teaching in English.
So this would have been right after your mission then?
Yes, it was soon after,
We
courted by just writing to each other for the 2 years I was gone, you know. We talked about getting married. We hadn't really agreed to it. I said, if I feel like I do now about you when I get back from mission, I'll want to marry you. And I did and she did, and so we did.
Yes. Okay.
And almost immediately after we were married, I was drafted into the Army and went in for 2 years. But she was able to visit, and then finally she was able to come and stay, because at Camp Roberts, even though I was in basic training and was stuck every night in the barracks, we found a place to rent a trailer on the property, on the Las Vegas property, or Camp Roberts property, I should say. And so she came and stayed there. And So I had a wife, even when I was in basic training, I couldn't see her all the time, but mm-hmm. I could go there from time to time.
Nice.
At one time, I know, I remember I'd spent the night with her, and I came back, several of us came back as we'd doing it, staying with our wives, come back next morning, this basic training, beginning of the day, everybody was gone. We thought, oh my gosh, we're in trouble now. There was a fire, and they had taken the whole group to fight the fire.
Oh.
And we got there, we said, so we promptly joined the next unit that was going to help fight the fire, so we would be out there.
Great, great.
And that was okay. They let that pass. That was, we weren't supposed to do that. We were supposed to be back in the barracks at night, you know, and we, several of us had gone to stay with our wives overnight and come back to the morning, there for the morning beginnings.
Would you ask your sergeant for permission for that, or would you just sort of slip out?
I just did it.
Okay.
I just did it. But it made it very pleasant to have my wife there, and in fact, our first daughter was born after we had been transferred to Fort Ord from Camp Roberts. So she was born in an Army hospital.
What year was that?
Let's see. 52, 53, had to be 53. Yeah, 1953, I believe.
And what's her name?
Rebecca.
Okay.
Is her daughter's name. And
so let's back up a minute. You mentioned that your job was to train supply sergeants. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What did that entail?
Well, several different things. There were the six of us there. We were spread up to doing different things. Mine was teaching them maintenance of the weapons. That was a nice thing. We got to try to fire all the weapons and so on. Maintenance of the weapons and so on. But there's others teaching them about, you know, keeping the records that supply sergeants have to keep and managing the thing. I can't remember all the different details we had.
But okay.
It was that sort of thing, anyway, that we spent. And it was enjoyable because we got to experience with the weapons and learn more about them. We had to, you know. We'd have them practice this in class. We'd practice disassembling and assembling the weapon.
Okay.
And seeing how it worked and so on. And,
so when I think of the supply sergeant and I think of weapons, I think of the supply sergeant would have to order ammunition.
Yep.
Would have to order the pieces of the weapons that would break down.
Right.
So would have to know them very well.
Know them very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I also think about supply. I think about vehicles and gasoline and food and
yeah.
bedding and,
yeah,
and
they had to deal with all these things. Yeah.
Okay.
And I tried to train them with those experiences.
Okay.
But because we were married, there were several of us who were married that were in this group teaching them. And we were able to live off post in Monterey, California.
Okay.
Beautiful place, right by the sea. In fact, we had a little house. We rented a little house just about a half a mile above the shoreline, the beach area.
Wow.
It was kind of rocky right there where we were, but it was right there by the sea.
Beautiful.
Beautiful place.
Huh.
And. Then when I was getting near to the time of getting released, my wife was pregnant again, the second time, and we knew it was going to be really close because she was due, the doctors had put about the same time that I was going to be discharged.
Okay.
If I got discharged before the babies were born, then it was on our own. We had to pay all the insurance, all the expenses. If they were born while I was still in the service, then the post paid for them, the post hospital. They were born just 4 days before I was discharged, just under the wire.
What was your second child's name?
They were twins. They were twins, Marcia and Michelle.
Okay.
Twin daughters. We didn't even know we were having twins. My wife knew that she was very uncomfortable and heavy.
Mm.
But she didn't know there were two. The doctors could only hear one heartbeat, but apparently there were two heartbeats in there, and they just sensed the one. And when they got out, the doctor got him. I said, I wasn't there because they wouldn't let me go, but my wife told me the spirit Come on, baby. Oh, he said there's another one in there. They got the now, now, and he said, oh, there's another one in there. He was just kidding. You know? Oh. But it was a nice experience, and it was, we felt very pleasant to have that kind of happen the way it did. It all, the only expense we had was her meals while she was in the hospital with the new babies. But otherwise, we come and covered everything else, and that
what,
was good.
What was your rank on discharge?
I was a sergeant.
Okay. Okay. Take a look at this. We've been going about 45 minutes here.
Wow.
Happily yik-yakking away. Maybe this is a good place to put a comma in this oral history series.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up again, part two.
Okay.
After you get discharged.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay,
yeah.
And this is a 1954.
We've been 55.
Okay.
55, yeah.
1955. Great.
I went in 53 and got out in 55. And then we drove home to my parents' home in Idaho. Because I had, by this time, let me think a little more about that.
I tell you what.
No, I didn't. I had, by this time, made arrangements to go to Utah State University for graduate school.
Okay, now I'm so we'll hold this up for a minute, but I'm a little confused because you had gone to 2 years community college,
right,
in Rexburg at Ricks College, and then you went to your mission.
Yep.
And then you went to the service.
Right.
So you still had 2 more years to go.
Yes, and I was I should have said I went back to Utah State University for the last 2 years to get my degree, my BS degree. Yes.
Okay, so this is where we'll stop this.
Okay.
And we'll pick this up with you going to finish off your undergraduate degree.
Okay. All right.
Great. Is there anything else about the material we've covered that you would like to bring in before I hit the stop button?
I don't think so, because I'm thinking back now what happens when I got to Utah State.
Okay.
It was pretty important to my decision to go on.
Well, so if you remember, you know, I wanted to mention a time when I was 7 and my little brother was, you know, 5, and we went out and did such and such.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell me next time. Don't hesitate to bring that into the next interview.
All right.
Great. Well, with that, this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Stanley Buse. Today is August 10th, 2021. My name is Tom Martin. Thank you so much, Stanley.
You bet.